Hey, this is Bob Berg, co-author of the Go Giver series. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, listen to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Bob Berg is a sought-after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences, sharing the platform with everyone from today's business leaders and broadcast personalities to even a former U.S. president. He is the author of a number of books on sales, marketing, and influence with total sales of nearly 2 million copies. Most people know him in the sales community from his book, The Go-Giver, and that series that he co-authored with John David Mann, which itself sold 950,000 copies so far and has been translated into 28 languages. I'm super excited because this is something that I think is amazing and shows lots of value. And what I love too is that Bob is an advocate and supporter and defender of the free enterprise system about business and value and making money based on how you're serving people. And so I'm super honored. Bob, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason, and congratulations on the new book. That is wonderful. I love the title. Can't wait to read it and learn from it.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Obviously, I now know what it's like to write a book and that journey, so I can imagine what it's like, in the path that you've gone on. And of course, I hope and be excited when my book hits those kind of numbers and that kind of value out there.
It will. So, it will.
Thank you.
Love the title.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it's when it hit me, I was like, this is instant. Like, this is something that frames what I've done, which I feel like that's the same thing with you. When I read your stuff, it's like, okay, this is you on paper and your philosophy and what you do for people. So you have so much great content out there. Most people know who you are. Everybody lists your book in the top three, one, two, three, somewhere in that, as far as what people must read. For the people out there that don't know you, for those couple of people, how would you describe it to people? Your book, the philosophy, how do you explain that?
Sure. Well, The Go-Giver is a parable that's written with, co-authored with John David Mann, the entire series we did together. And he's a great writer and storyteller. I'm really a how-to guy, right? Step one, step two, step three. So John is the person who really makes the story sing. It's really the basic premise of the story, of the theme throughout, is simply that shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, Jason, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, which I know is what you stand for. And knowing that doing business this way is not only a more fulfilling way, but it's actually the most financially profitable way as well. Not for some woo-woo kind of way out there, magical, mystical reasons. No, it's actually quite rational when you think about it. Because when you're that person who can take your focus off of yourself and place it on making that other person's life better, helping them get what they want, helping make their life better, helping solve their challenges, helping them accomplish what they're looking. Well, you know, people feel good about you. People want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to be in relationship with you. They want to do business with you. They want to refer you to others. So it really is a matter of understanding the importance of that focus being not on you, but on them.
And what I think is super important for people to understand, and this is where there's a lot of disconnect, which goes into your free enterprise focus and stance as well, which I think is important, is it's not just about giving, right? And it's not about giving to get, but it's about giving with the goal of also rewarding if you're providing value. I mean, there's a lot of people who give a lot, and I put them in the bucket of order taker because they're giving and they're hoping, but they're not moving things forward. And what you're saying is you give so much value, people are going to buy and you're going to be that one that's going to help them.
Yeah, because it's always a matter of defining terms. And that's why when we say giving, we're not talking in this case about charity, which we believe in, of course, and we hold as a high value, but that's a different thing. We're talking about this actually in the business sense. And the value you're bringing to someone is designed to make their life better, whether it's business to business or business to consumer. It's always a person you're dealing with, and they have their reasons for buying. You know, I often, when I speak at a sales conference, I'll begin by saying, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. They're not going to buy from you because you need the money, and they're not even going to buy from you because you're a really nice person. They're going to buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And I know that you and your team go in and you change a lot of sales organizations and you take them to a whole new level. And one of the things you are teaching them is, hey, it's up to them to be the one to communicate that value, right? So that's when we talk about giving. That's what we're really talking about. We're talking about that focus on bringing immense value to the life of another human being.
So you've been at this game for a little bit. What shifts have you seen in sales? Like from when you first started on your sales leadership development training path years ago to now? Have you seen shifts? Have you seen positive shifts?
Yeah, I think it's mostly positive shifts. Because even back when I was starting, and I'm 62 and a half now, so I've been at this for quite a while. And back then it was, I mean, sustainably successful salespeople always did this with their eye on pleasing the customer, bringing that, of course. But there was a lot more of the closer type of thing where the big thing was, could you close? Are you a closer? Now, you've, of course, got to be able to ask for the order, and you've got to. The big difference I see now is that people have more of an understanding that the success of a close is much more dependent on how great your open was. And by that, I mean your discovery. If you're able to really discover what that other person needs, wants, desires, if you're able to ask the right questions that not only bring out those needs, wants, and desires, but also allow you to be able to point out ways that they may have challenges that they didn't even know they had, right? So that you're able to help them in that way that they didn't even know was there. If you're able to confirm that what you've heard is what they've said, and if you're able to then match the benefits of your product or service with their needs, wants, and desires. Now, when you ask for the close, it doesn't have to be this big, strong, powerful close that you're at. It's just you're basically asking them to take action on something they've already told you they want to do. And I see that as a lot different than it was when I was first starting out, when there was such an emphasis on basically, yeah, you ask questions. It was always known that that was a thing, of course, but it was present the information, close. And so I see sales being a lot different. I see it being a lot more sophisticated in a way that it should be.
And for me, and what I've seen is that a lot of that is predicated by the fact that most prospects, most potential customers no longer need the salesperson for information.
Exactly.
Right? Everything is out there.
So it used to be we brought them, we were bearers of information.
Right.
Yeah. Which is great because it allows that salesperson who really does care and will get to know that niche or whatever it is they're doing, depending upon what you do, if you can be working a niche market or if you know that there are certain, it makes it really easier to get to the real help, to get to the real value because the information's already there. So, you know, when I hear people say, well, salespeople aren't needed anymore, because no, salespeople are needed absolutely. It's just at a whole different point and at a whole different level. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and salespeople aren't needed for information anymore. What they're needed for is wisdom. So they're needed for tying everything together and then applying it to that person.
Perfectly
for
said.
The what's in it for you mode, which is all that they care about, like you mentioned.
Absolutely.
And so, that's where the long monologues and the brochure reading and the feature benefit conversation is a part of it, but not the part of it anymore.
Right, like exactly.
With the companies that you're working with, the ones that you've been seeing, like even recently, what are the good ones, the successful ones doing well in their sales teams?
I think, first of all, the leadership creating a culture where the salespeople feel valued and they feel equipped and they feel supported. And it's a team effort. And at the same time, the salesperson is respected and has the autonomy to go out there and do the job that they need to do. Yeah, again, I suspect that's always been a part of what the good ones have done, the good companies have done. But I think, again, it's gotten more sophisticated. There's just a lot more knowledge out there. And leadership is a lot more equipped to equip their sales team. That said, you still see a lot of them doing it in a way that's not very productive. And people say, well, why, when there's all this information out there and how to do it well? And I always think of Jim Rohn, the great speaker and business philosopher. And you know, say, why? I don't know. Just one of those mysteries of life. Because yeah, we've got the Jasons out there to go into these companies, and we've got other people who are doing this. And you know, you think there's so many great books out there and so many great teachings out there, and you still see leaders that do a command and control, and you still see salespeople out there just trying to hammer home their points, and it's about them and the product. I don't know.
And hopefully over time, just like most things do, is those, the population, the group will evolve a certain way where those groups will evolve to being less effective and less supported by the world and by
companies. And I think that's happening. They're still there, but you're right. I see that happening.
Yeah, I think so. So what do you think, like in what you've seen, again, more recent, right? We took a look at it, that successful salespeople are doing when they're in their conversations, their process. What is it that you see separates like the successful ones, maybe not the like absolute crusher ones, but the ones that just have a very steady, successful sales career or above from the others?
I think it always comes down to influence, because that's really what we're talking about. If you take influence, and I think you can take it two different ways. I think you can take it on a very basic level and then expand it. And let's do both. On a very, very basic level, influence can be defined as the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. In this case, it would be the sale taking place. Again, we're assuming a priori that it's good for the prospect and everyone involved. So with that being the case, the salesperson's job is to influence. You and I would say, I'm sure that when it comes to influence, there are two types. There's persuasion, which is positive. There's manipulation, which is negative, okay? You and I both look at persuasion, of course, as being the, what I call the good twin, okay?
Right.
Right?
So exactly.
We can use the word influence, or we can use the word persuasion. So it's being able to move that person to a decision that's in their best interest and in which they feel good about, okay? So by definition, that's influence, that ability, but it's not its essence. And this is what I think great salespeople understand. The essence of influence, or the essence of persuasion, is pull, okay? It's pull as opposed to push, as in how far can you push a rope? And we know the answer is not very, right? At least not very quickly or very effectively, which is why great influencers don't push. You don't hear people say, wow, that Joe or that Diane, she is so influential. She has a lot of push with people. No. She's influential. She has a lot of pull with people. That's what influence is. That's what persuasion is. It's an attraction, right? It's pull. Great influencers attract people. In this case, salespeople attract prospects first to themselves and then to their idea. And they do this really through, I think, understanding it. And you alluded to this earlier, that something Dale Carnegie said in his classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People, that ultimately people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. You use the WIIFM, what's in it for me or what's in it for them. And we know this, of course. And that's the only reason why anyone should. Why wouldn't they? And so the great influencer, the great persuader starts by asking themselves questions to make sure they're facing the right direction, which is outward. Okay. So we want to be inwardly motivated, outwardly focused. And I think most great salespeople are that. So the questions might be, how is what I'm asking this person to do, how does it align with their goals, with their needs, their wants, their desires? How does what I'm asking this other person to do, how does it align with their values? What goals am I helping them accomplish? What problems am I helping them to solve? How will this bring them closer to happiness, if you will, however they would understand happiness in that context. And when asking ourselves these questions thoughtfully, intelligently, genuinely, authentically, as you point out right in your title, again, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way of positively persuading someone that's going to help build them. When we do this, now we've come a lot closer to earning that person's commitment to our idea. It's no longer a matter of the old sales model of compliance, right? That was the pushiness. Right. And so I think that's what the great salespeople do. And I think they do it, and you can name lots of them, and because that's what they do. Who they are, they're the ones that are sustainably successful. You can go into any sales organization, and there are those who can do it the wrong way and sure have some success. And some of them, it seems like they continue to, but they're doing that in spite of some of those habits. And it's a lot harder to do, right?
And they're usually not consistent. The results aren't there.
Absolutely. But when you see someone sustainably successful, you know that's what they're doing.
What's fascinating, and this is always a language game, right? The words that people use back and forth. But what's interesting, and I realized this, and this was a part of what I put in the book and I train people, is literally all the stuff you're talking about. And for salespeople to see themselves as a leader, because all of those traits Absolutely. You just mentioned are the traits of what makes for a successful leader. Now, we think of leader as like a business owner, a manager, the leader of a group or a country. And it's like, okay, they are pulling people along with their focus, their mission, but for the other person's reasons to be aligned with that mission, and they're pulling everyone along. They're not pushing, right? A leader's not pushing. A leader is pulling and just bringing people in with them on their mission. When you're a professional, highly effective salesperson, you are a leader of that prospect.
Absolutely.
And you're going to pull them on the journey for their benefit.
Exactly.
And you don't have to push. That's where people ask me all the time. It's like, well, tell me the best way to ask for the sale. I don't think you should, because if you're a good, effective leader as a salesperson, you don't have to ask them. You're just leading them, right? You don't have to say, hey, will you follow me? It's like, I know where we're going. Come on. I know what we're going to do. Like you said, the opening is the most important. You get those discovery questions. You understand what they want and need at the deepest level. Mm-hmm. The rest of it's just a transaction. Just follow me. I know where we're going.
I love it. Well said. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and then that's the part where, okay, what are struggling salespeople do, which would be the opposite of that.
Yeah. So, it's interesting that it tends to be that the struggling salespeople are focused on themselves and their product or service. And I remember a couple of years after I got into sales and I was in a slump. I started with another company and I was in a really bad slump, and it was a high ticket item. And it was, so the whole process was a process. And I was really, and as I was in that slump, I was really getting focused on myself. And I remember coming back to the office one day after a non-selling appointment. It was supposed to be a selling appointment, but it,
of course.
It was my own
You're in a slump.
Doing non-selling, yeah. And there was an older guy who was working there, which is really funny because this is probably almost 40 years ago. And so when I say a much older guy, I'm talking about my age now, right?
Right.
Decrepit old guy, right? You know, so,
but, maybe. He might have been 10. He might have been in his 30s. But, yeah. Seemed old, right?
Yeah. And he wasn't, by the way, in the sales department. I think he was in the engineering department or something. He actually did retire soon after that. I didn't know him well, but he was a really nice guy. He didn't say much. Whenever he did say something, it was typically very profound. Yeah. And I think he saw me as sort of Joe in The Go-Giver, which I would co-author many years from now. So he probably didn't see me as being Joe as much as Bob, but a Bob who was struggling just like Joe in the book, the young, up-and-coming, aggressive, ambitious guy who was out there and hustling and so forth, but really was struggling. Was not nearly reaching his potential. So when he said to me, Berg, he was a last name kind of guy. When he said, Berg, can I give you some advice? I said, absolutely, please do. I really need it. And he said, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. Your target is serving others. Now, when you hit the target, you'll get a reward. And that reward will come in the form of money, and you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget, he said, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It ain't the target itself. Your target is serving others. And that's when it really hit me that great salesmanship, as we talked about earlier, is never about the salesperson, right? It's never about the product or service, as important as that is. What it's always about is the other person. It's how you're going to add value to the life of another human being. It's how that human being's life is going to be better off just because you are a part of it. I think that's the difference between the successful salesperson and the struggling one.
I completely agree. And that always reverts me to the Zig Ziglar quote, you help enough people get what they want in life and you'll get everything you want.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But it's in that Zig order. Like you help other people, you'll get it in return. Don't worry. You just got to do the first part.
Well, that's why we say that money is an echo of value, right? It doesn't come first. The money is the echo. In the story, Pindar said to Joe that you wouldn't go to a fireplace and say, first, you give me some fire and heat, and then I'll throw on some logs and light and some newspaper and light a match. You wouldn't go to a bank to open an account and say, hey, I want to open this bank account, but first you give me an interest payment. Then I'll make a deposit. Life doesn't work that way. And successful people deal in truths. They look at life the way it is, not the way they wish it would be. Now, it doesn't mean they settle for just what is and say, oh, no. But they first deal with, they first acknowledge and embrace what is. From there, now they take the proper steps to build upon it for everyone's advantage.
Yeah, and that's definitely a paradigm philosophical shift for a lot of people, which is to do that, right? So instead of like, okay, well, you pay me for this and then I'll start building value. Instead, let me build value and then I'll get paid for it,
exactly.
Right? You know, where there's a shift with a lot of people in a less positive way, which is if you give me this raise and this promotion, then I'll work harder.
Right, right, because, exactly.
You know, instead of like, no, you work hard and show that you're worth it, mm-hmm. then you will get it, right?
Exactly.
So is there a single trait, personality, mindset, beyond what we've talked about, but just like of what makes successful salespeople, is there a trait?
Well, Adam Grant, in his already classic Give and Take book, cited a study of Australian financial advisors, okay? So people who are basically selling the idea of investing their money for growth with them, okay? So, and they looked at what separated the top, the very, very top, Australian financial advisors from the rest. And they looked at the traits and they looked at the skill sets and talents and so forth. And financial acumen was one of them. They all had that. But of course, even the less successful ones also had that. Okay. There was the ability to work hard, which the top ones had. But of course, the other ones had that as well. No, the distinguishing trait was that the ultra, we would call stratospherically successful financial advisors did was they put the interests of their client ahead of themselves and ahead of their companies. And as a result, you go right back to Zig's quote, right? And yep. They were the top of the line.
I'm noticing a theme here.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I love that you said that because we always want to make sure that people understand when we say, because the law of influence, law number three in the Go-Giver is your influence is determined by how abundantly you place the other person's interests first. Yes. But we want to qualify that and make sure people know we're not saying in any way that you should be a doormat or a right. martyr or self-sacrificial. No, not one single bit. It's simply understanding, as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of the mentors, the golden rule of business, the golden rule of sales is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And as you know, because you teach us, there's no faster, more powerful, more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely and, as you say, authentically moving from that I focus or me focus to that other focus.
Yeah, I love it. So shifting a little bit, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, third baseman for the Boston Red Sox. And I could have.
Until what point?
I could have until I realized I was missing just one little thing, and that was any semblance of talent. But, but until then, you know, absolutely.
And when did that realization hit? When did that world fall apart?
I think I was in 10th grade. Yeah.
10th grade. And then you realized it wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't going to happen. I did want to be a broadcaster, which is what I started out being. I was a sportscaster on radio and then a newscaster on television at a very, very small ABC affiliate. I wasn't particularly good at that either. And that's when I like to say I graduated into sales.
And when was that? Like what age were you at when you like in sales started?
26 maybe.
Yeah.
I guess you're at 25 or 26, it would have had been. Yeah.
Did you have kind of experiences early on in sales when you looked back and said, yeah, I guess I was selling from an early age? Or were you pretty much not sales?
I had no formal sales training at that point. And so in the company where I was first working, their training was, well, we'll say negligible. at best. It was non-existent.
Classic.
So I was really on my own. So I really floundered for the first few months. And then one day I was in a bookstore searching for something. I wasn't sure what. And there were actually a couple of books I saw on sales, which again, seems like no big deal today, but 40 or so years ago, you didn't see that as much. And I remember there were two of them. There was one by Tom Hopkins and one by Zig Ziglar. And I remember getting those books. First, I was just encouraged that they were books on how to sell. I mean, I didn't know that was a thing. Can you imagine that? I didn't even know that was a thing, that there was a way to do that, right? I took the books home and I just started studying it at night. So from early evening to the wee hours of the morning, I mean, I was reading and studying and highlighting and note-taking and underlining and dog-earing and practicing. And within a few weeks, my sales really began to go well, which again, said to me, and something I understood for the first time, is if you have a methodology for doing something, you can pretty much accomplish anything other than being third baseman for the Boston Red Sox, but anything within any kind of reason. So if you have a system, and to this day, I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles, the key being predictability. If it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired results of B, then you know that all you need to do is A and continue to do A and continue to do A, you'll eventually get the desired results of B. So that was really, for me, what a boost that was, just to know that. So I really studied, I made sales a study. And of course, one of the great things about studying sales is you start learning that it's all about personal development. And so I started getting all the books, the Dale Carnegie book, Think and Grow Rich, and Psycho-Cybernetics, and all these books that just added so much to my life on the inside, which then caused the success, the outward success, to manifest.
That's awesome. What's your definition of success?
My definition of success, by the way, success can be defined in many ways, and they don't really conflict, because it can be as surface as accomplishing a specific goal, or one team wins, the other loses. The team that won, they were successful, but even the team that lost, if they were playing better than their potential and improving, they didn't win. They weren't successful in terms of that game, but they were successful in terms of bettering themselves, right? Or you look at Earl Nightingale. Back when I was just starting in sales, he was the guy with personal development, The Strangest Secret, and his audios at the time. And he said, success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. And you think about how brilliant that is, right? Success is the continual progression of a worthy ideal. So just progressing toward that worthy ideal, there is success just in the progression, okay? But then a worthy ideal,
right?
Okay. So being the top drug dealer in your neighborhood, that would not be success, because that's not a worthy ideal. But the progressive realization of a worthy ideal, to me, how brilliant can a definition be? Now, my definition of success is a genuine and ongoing feeling of happiness and peace of mind, the result of living up to your potential. Okay. So to the degree in any area, whether it's financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, what have you, to the degree that you have lived up to your potential in doing so, that's the degree to which you're successful.
I love it. Last question, journey or the destination?
It's more politically correct to say the journey. And I think the journey is very important, but I also like the destination when you have one.
I'm laughing because I can completely relate.
Yeah. I mean, we always go on another journey after we've hit a destination, but without the destination, it's not a lot of fun either. But although if you have something you're so immensely passionate about, some say, well, the journey is obviously, that's the thing, right? If you're enjoying and just loving the journey, that in and of itself is wonderful, but we are on a journey toward destinations. I think that's how we're built as human beings. So to say, oh no, that's like when people say, what's better or what's important? Quality or quantity? Well, they're both important. Quality, of course, is the focus, but then there's also quantity. It's the difference between adding immense value to the life of one person and being able to add immense value to the lives of many people. They're both important. You focus on the quality, of course, but to the degree you focus on the quality, that's the degree you are going to build that quantity of quality.
Yeah, I love it. So for people out there, if they want to learn more about you and what you're doing as an author, speaker, you've got Burg.com, B-U-R-G.com, which I love. And for the book series, you have thegogiver.com for anyone interested. What's cool is you also have the first chapter of the book that people can download to get a taste for it. But obviously, yeah, they're going to love it. It's such a great parable and a great story. And I love the video you have too. There's also a really cool video that you have explaining, kind of breaking down the book and kind of sharing what the story is about. Is there anywhere else that you're active or anywhere else people can find other content you're working on?
No, and I'd say they can even get information on the book on Burg.com. Everything's pretty much there. And they can also connect with me on social media at Burg.com and so forth. So yeah, I invite them to do that. And again, I appreciate you so much for having me on your program. You know, it's people like you that make the sales profession the respected profession that it's supposed to be and that it should be. And I thank you for the great work you're doing.
Well, I appreciate that coming from someone who's been in this game for quite some time, because that's really what my focus is. And I appreciate people like you and others in this whole realm where we're trying to shift that way that the public views sales and as a profession instead of as a dirty word that people are afraid to admit that they do. And I thank you for everything that you've done in there and the millions of lives that you've touched with your books and kind of getting that message and changing that shift. And I appreciate your time today, Bob. Thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you. My pleasure and honor.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.